I often have almost a
Is that better? I shouldn't play with the IT guys. They can really make a mess of your life. When I look at the parable of the prodigal son in Luke 15, I often have this shocking awakening that I'm like a small child who realizes that the being they're seeing in a mirror is themselves. You know, when that happens, you see little children do that. They're playing with a mirror, and all of a sudden they kind of recognize, oh, that's me. I recognize that in the parable of the prodigal son. We sing about prodigals. God is calling the prodigal. And when I was a boy, I used to think that prodigal was a word that meant sinful or wicked. And that's really not what it means. The word prodigal really means wasteful. And while many of us may not see ourselves particularly as wicked people, I think we all would acknowledge that in some way or another we've been wasteful. And I'm not even talking in terms of throwing away food that we have or being extravagant in driving our vehicles or anything like that, but that we have wasted the lives that God gave us. So this prodigal son, even though the story is as old as the Bible, is so fresh. There aren't a lot of characters in the Bible whom I think could fit really well in the 21st century, but he really can. He is one of us. The prodigal is just like so many of us. Maybe in some respect all of us, but we find ourselves in this story. And if you will key on one verse with me for just a few moments here, I would like to look particularly at verse 17 in a moment. Repeating the story as we looked at it in the last hour, a young man who's living in his father's house decides, I don't want to be here anymore. I think he probably had made up his mind to leave even before he asked his father for the inheritance. It just seems to me to be that mentality that he says to his father, give me the share of the inheritance that falls to me. Why do you want it now? Well, because even if he were to articulate it, I'm leaving home. I'm getting out of here and I need the wherewithal to live. And then he goes off into a distant country. He wastes his life there. When all his money is spent, all his friends are gone, a famine comes. Invariably, some tragedy occurs that just heightens his misery. And he hires himself out to a man who raises pigs. And he is feeding the pigs and looking at what they eat and thinking, this looks good. Now, we pick up the story here. No one was giving anything to him in verse 16. And when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I am dying here with hunger. We use the word dying so loosely. You know, we will say about something that embarrassed us, and I'm standing there and I'm dying. My family uses superlatives to describe their physical state often. When my girls were younger and we'd be driving in the car, going on a trip somewhere, somebody in the family, either my wife or one of my girls, would say, can we stop soon? I am dying of hunger. Or, even more often, I am parched. Could we stop and get something to drink? I am parched. And I'm thinking, how do you arrive at that state within just a couple of hours? Maybe I've been driving longer than I thought, and we're in the fourth day, and I haven't stopped or something. But dying of hunger and parched just seems so intense words for, I've got a bit of a thirst, or I just felt the first hunger pang, and I want to make sure we ward that off before he gets serious here. But I think this young man is using that word literally. A couple of reasons why I think that. First of all, because it says he had nothing and no one was giving him anything. So I don't know how long he's been without food. But then to look at what pigs are eating and say that looks pretty good indicates he's been without for quite a while. Dying with hunger. If we were to look at him, if we could go to that scene and see him out in that field throwing the slop to the pigs and actually looking at it and thinking that doesn't look bad, if we could see him, we might very well say that boy is dying of hunger. He's emaciated. All his bones are showing through his skin and his face is gaunt and he looks horrible. He's dying of hunger. We might see that. Not all hungers and starvations are quite so obvious. There are, in an audience of this size, I will guarantee you, there are people here who are dying of hunger. Maybe not for physical food, but there are people here who are dying of hunger for a relationship with people. Dying from hunger for a sense of self-worth. Dying from hunger for financial wherewithal. And those aren't always as obvious. But we all have this sense of dying with some kind of hunger. There's some loss or lack in the life of every one of us. A hole in our soul, if you would have it, that only God can fill. And what's a blessing for this young man is that he came to realize that. We have people in this audience, maybe this morning, who don't even realize it. They're dying of hunger and aren't even aware of it. In Luke chapter 7, Jesus tells the story of having gone to the home of Simon, who is very wealthy. And a party is being given in Jesus' honor, almost like a reception for Jesus. And there is a prostitute who shows up, who engages Jesus in trying to take care of him. And Simon and others are looking at this woman and looking at her with disdain, and that Jesus, if he only knew what this woman was. And Jesus speaks up to Simon and he says, "Hey Simon, I want to ask you something. Who's more grateful, the person who's forgiven much or forgiven little?" And of course Simon answers properly, "Well, the person who's forgiven much." And the point of that whole story is to say Simon isn't aware of his own need. He's not even aware of it. He's the one in greater poverty at this moment than the prostitute, because she at least is recognizing her lack and her salvation. She lacks what she needs and Jesus can give it to her. She recognizes that. Simon doesn't. Simon's in the same need she is, but doesn't recognize that. I introduce this lesson with that in mind because I don't want you to look at the parable of the prodigal son as we are going to be looking at it intensely over the next few days. And I want to say something. I've enjoyed myself so much already. I've decided I'm staying through Wednesday. I'm not gonna leave y'all after Tuesday. I am staying till Wednesday. Now you got to put up with me because my flight doesn't go home until Thursday anyway. So, I don't want you looking at this story and seeing it as something we just watch and say, "No, no, no, isn't that sad? What a sad case. Sad boy. Bad choices." I want you to have that experience I've had in looking at that story and realizing, oh, that's not a window, that's a mirror. I'm not looking through glass and seeing somebody on the other side. I am looking at myself in this parable, this story that Jesus has to offer us. I want to ask just two questions this morning. One is, why did he leave? And number two is, how did he get back? Why did he leave home? I'll tell you what I don't think it was. I don't believe, and there are people whom I'm about to describe. I don't think it was, I'm leaving because I want to destroy my life, or I want to get back at other people and destroy their lives. There are people who do that. There are people who intent on destroying their relationship with somebody will do whatever they need to do to wreck the lives of others around them. You'll be sorry one day. That concept or idea. There are people who commit suicide. On that basis alone, I will punish other people. Or, my life isn't worth living, I'm going to wreck it. I think there are people who get involved in drug addictions that way. Or alcohol addictions that way. It's an attempt to really wreck their own lives. I have nothing to live for, I might as well just go ahead and be miserable. I don't believe the prodigal's trying to do that. I don't think that's his reasoning. I think he goes to please himself. We talked about that earlier. He's looking for happiness. He's going out there because he thinks there's something out there he can't have at home. And there are three words that are used of his profligate lifestyle. Verse 13 says he squandered his estate. Verse 14 says when he had spent all that he had. And then in verse 30, his older brother accuses him of having devoured his father's wealth. Those are strong terms. Those are strong terms. They can carry great consequences. He squandered. He spent all that he had. He devoured his father's inheritance. Today, we would probably call the prodigal one who is going to find himself. I use those words, find himself. He's going to find out what he really is. And he has little thought as to what that will do to others. And we're going to talk a little bit, Lord allowing, we're going to talk a little bit about the father in this situation, and we're going to talk about the elder brother. He is unaware, I think, of what this is doing to other people. And isn't that true in so many cases? How many children have broken their parents' hearts and never even knew they did that? Never knew it. Maybe did that by their choice in a marriage partner. Maybe did that by their choice in a job. Maybe did that by their rejection of the parents' faith. Maybe did that by never coming back home to visit or to see or to take care of family. Breaking hearts. Don't even know it because pursuing their own lifestyle. Harry Chapin years ago made that so evident in his song Cats in the Cradle about a father who's just busy, doesn't recognize what his business is doing to his son, and then he finally reaches a point where he's able to enjoy a relationship with his son. Son's too busy. I don't think we're always even aware of what we do to others in those circumstances. But we need to remember, no man is an island. Romans chapter 14, verse 7 says, no one of us lives to ourselves and no one of us dies to ourselves. We need to be so aware of how we affect other people. How what we do affects other people. No one of us lives to ourselves. And I think about different people in our society. These are representatives. They certainly could fall into other categories. But I remember seeing a commercial one time for a beer manufacturing company. I'll let it remain anonymous. But the person who was touting it was really handsome, very articulate, warm. The kind of person I think any one of us would say, you know what, I bet I'd really enjoy just having dinner with that guy. And he just seemed so cultured and kind. And he's manufacturing a product that has caused incredible pain and sorrow to the world. Now, is that guy the devil incarnate? Is he doing that intentionally? I think if you were to ask him, why do you do what you do? He'd say, well, I'm making a living for myself. I'm trying to find my own way. I'm finding myself and joy and happiness in my life. This is what I do to achieve that without recognizing what a wreckage alcohol has left in our culture. Alcohol costs our government alone $184 billion annually. That number used to mean more before we started talking about trillions. But that's a lot of money to attribute to alcoholism. It causes 110,000 deaths a year. 65.5 million people who become addicted to alcohol. The Harvard School of Public Health concludes alcohol is the most frequent cause of academic failure. Do you hear that? Alcohol is the leading cause of academic failure. It is the leading cause of vandalism. It is the leading cause of fights, assaults, date rape, accidental death, and murder. Alcohol. Responsible for all those. Leading cause. Not every one of those crimes and assaults are attributed to alcohol, but it's a leading cause for all of those. And I find it so sad that 8 young people a day die from alcohol-related incidents. 8 young people every day in this country die from alcohol-related incidents. I think about the guy who just deals cards at a casino, who's just making his way, just, that's my job and that's what I do, and dealing financial death to people everywhere. Or the young man who's just trying to make his own life and becomes a reluctant single father. Doesn't want to take care of the child or the woman who bore his child. All of them acting out of pleasing themselves. I mean, and again, it's not, I want to cause misery, but it leaves that wake behind it everywhere sin goes. And pleasing yourself becomes very expensive. Listen to those words again. He squandered his estate. Nothing pleasant about that. That's not anything you'd ever want to put on a resume. You qualify for a job? Yeah, I've squandered a lot of things in my life. You don't want to use that word. Not a good word. When he had spent all he had. Spent. What a word that's got so many meanings for us. Spent. I'm spent. You know, I'm spent. Call my wife. Where are you? I'm out shopping. How much longer are you going to be? Not much more. I've spent all we got. Not good. Not good. And then that stronger term that the elder brother uses, he's devoured his father's inheritance. But I'll tell you what else it cost him. It didn't just cost him what he had. It cost him his heritage. It says he, a few days later, went on a journey to a distant country. He left home. And in leaving home, he left his father. To leave God is to always leave home. I don't know if you can grasp that concept, but when you leave God, you always leave your home. It's where all of us were supposed to be, or are supposed to be, home with God. In fact, the Bible even talks about that in terms of God is our dwelling place. Not He lives in it, He is our dwelling place. So anytime you leave God, you've left home, where you belong. You've left your heritage. You've left where you're supposed to be. Anytime you leave God. Deuteronomy 33:27. The eternal God is a dwelling place. Psalm 90:1. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. You leave God, you've left home. Even if you're dwelling in your physical parents' house, you've left home. Because that's where we're supposed to be. But here's something really ironic to me about the prodigal son. When he went to find himself, it cost him his freedom. The very thing he's going to establish, he's going to lose because of his actions. You see, if you look at him just before he says this, makes this statement, I am dying here with hunger, I want you to remember where he is. He has paid with the currency of his life for his profligate lifestyle, his wasteful lifestyle. Because where is he? He is working for a pig farmer. Now, I love pig farmers because they raise bacon. Pork chops. Smoked pork. But for a Jew, there isn't a job that would be more distasteful, more a rejection of everything he or she has been raised to be than to work on a pig farm. Pork is anathema to the Jewish culture in the Bible. And to not only work at the farm, but to actually interact with those pigs. I can't even think of what that job might be in our culture that would be so heinous that anybody would say, I'll not do that. I mean, I'll not stoop to that. But that's where he is. And he is, and it says he sent him into his fields to feed swine. So he's not volunteering to do anything. He is forced to go out there and take care of those pigs. Now where's his freedom? Remember him when he left? I am on my own. I am free. I got money. I got a future and it's all mine. And where is he now? Now he's sitting in among pigs feeding them slop. He's not in control of anything in his life. I grew up in the... My teen years were in the 60s and early 70s. And I remember my friends who used drugs and alcohol and talked in terms of how it freed them. Alcohol could make them be the person without inhibitions that they were when they weren't drinking. And drugs would just expand your mind and free your mind. And I know some of those people who stayed in that use long enough that they weren't free to do anything. It can do that to you. This free life has its price. I'm thinking about Samson who went to Gaza, and he is strong, he is virile, nobody stops Samson. He goes to Gaza to find his life and he ends up being in chains, blinded. Sin does that. If Thomas the Train were the prodigal son, Thomas would say, these tracks are too confining. I want to go out in that field. The tracks go straight ahead, but it's the same road every day. It's going down the same path every day. I want to be out in that field with those cows. How far do you think the train would get if it left the tracks? Wouldn't get anywhere. Can't go anywhere on the interstate. Can't go anywhere in a field. It's just bogged down. Why? Well, because its true freedom only came when it stayed on the tracks. That's really the only... And you and I are like that. We have tracks God has set up, and He says, stay on these tracks, you can go as far as you want, and you can go smoothly, but get off the tracks, it's going to be really tough for you. You'll bog down. And the prodigal finally reached that conclusion when he was sitting in that field, off the tracks, and couldn't go anywhere, and had nothing. No fuel, no food, no finances. He's got nothing. It cost him everything he had, this hunt for freedom. He was bankrupt. And not everybody reaches that depth, but you pursue a course of self-will long enough and you will. Many of us have friends that will turn us from that before that happens. All right. I want to give you three things on how he got back and we're done. How did he get back off of that? How did he get away from that? And if you're asking this question in the audience this morning, man, this guy's talking about my life. I mean, that's where I am. I got that hole in my soul. How do I get rid of that? What do I do? Here's the answer. Here it is. Number one, He came to himself. That's what the scriptures say. When he came to himself. The New American Standard says when he came to his senses. But other versions say when he came to himself. I love the to himself concept because it's an interesting term. Until then, he wasn't himself. You know, you hear people say that? They'll say, you know, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Why? Well, you're not yourself. Oh, who am I? I mean, I'm the only person I know. But what do we mean by that? Well, you're not who you normally are. You're not who you're supposed to be. So that concept, he's not himself. He came to himself, says a lot about us. We aren't ourselves when we sin. We're not ourselves when we hurt. We're not ourselves when we take from others. God didn't make us for that, folks. He did not make us for that. And that assessment requires honesty. He came to himself. What are you supposed to be? What are you supposed to be? You think about that. Secondly, he came to a decision. He said, I will get up and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. He came to a decision. That's what I need to do. I need to turn things around. He didn't just wait for somebody else to bail him out. He didn't pray to God, just change my circumstances. He said, I've got to do something about this situation. And let me tell you how it is simply. Go home and confess. Take your punishment. Go home. I don't mean to your physical home and your physical address. I mean go to your God. Confess what's wrong and take your punishment and licks. I like the way he says, I'm not coming home to say forgive me and everything's good. He says, I'm not worthy to be called your son. Make me a hired man. Make me as one of your hirelings. That's all I deserve. I will take my punishment for that. He came to a decision. After he came to himself. But then there's a third element that's really important. It's this. Look at verse 20. So he got up and came to his father. Takes action. There is a possibility for homecoming because there's a home for us. He came to his father. Come to your father. Thank God he's there for you. Thank God he provided for Jesus, whom we have honored in so many ways today, in our songs, in the supper of the Lord, in the prayers that have been offered. Jesus waits. Come to yourself. Come to a decision. And then come home. If we can help you in any way to do that this morning, do those three things. Come to the front and share the need with these people and come home while we stand and sing this song.